This episode of Star Wars in a Galaxy was recorded and produced during the 2023 WGA and SAG-AFTRA strikes. Without the labor of the writers and actors currently on strike, the stories being covered here wouldn't exist. Thank you, and enjoy this episode of In a Galaxy.
Hello there.
Welcome back to another episode of Star Wars in a Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Eli.
I'm Jacob.
And welcome to season 14 of Star Wars in a Galaxy. We did it. We are finally reviewing something that is not a animated TV show.
Yes.
What a monument we have reached.
This is no longer Star Wars in a Clone Wars.
In a Clone Wars, in a Bad Batch, whatever we want to say, in a Tales of the Jedi.
Yeah,
welcome to episode 110 of Star Wars in a Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on.
Big number.
We are so excited for this season. I'm so excited for the season. I don't want to speak for Jacob, but
I'm so goddamn excited
for the season because we are talking about Jedi Fallen Order. We are so grateful to the people at Gamers Little Playground. I rely on them a lot for cutscene montages. We're using them. We've always used them for In a Galaxy. I think maybe we use somebody different for KOTOR, but I've switched over to Gamers Little Playground for the YouTube cutscenes, and we'll put the link down in the description. They're great. I love their comprehensive playthroughs of stuff. No commentary, just, you know, like treating games like movies. Or like long television shows, because this playthrough of Jedi Fallen Order with the cutscenes and the vital stuff all together is just over 3 hours and 40 minutes long.
Yeah, pretty manageable, all things considered.
Yeah, because I remember KOTOR was like 6 hours.
Oh, dude.
But Jedi Fallen Order is about 3 hours, 40 minutes long. So we've decided to do 40 minutes an episode. So today, of course, we're doing the first 40 minutes. Our next episode, which we're not sure exactly when it's going to come out, but we do know that we're going to be doing the next 40 minutes, so from 40 minutes to 80 minutes in, or an hour and 20 minutes in, with two of the biggest Jedi Fallen Order fans I know. One of them is my good friend and confidant in Epic Conversations, Mr. Connor Chikiti, who basically made Jedi Fallen Order his entire personality from 2019, from late 2019 to like early 2021. And then we have one of our great inspirations in Star Wars content creation, isn't the C word there, Alex Damon from Star Wars Explained, who's also a big fan of Jedi Fallen Order. I think he has played that game over on his channel, like live streamed that game maybe 3 or 4 times. He's played through that game on live streams 3 or 4 times in the years it's come out.
Wow.
On Grandmaster difficulty, which props to him, because I am terrible at this stuff. So I will fully admit that I played pretty much all of my Fallen Order playthroughs when I played them at story mode, because I suck. I played Survivor at Padawan. I tried to start a Knight one, and it was going so good so far. And I think after I do this season, I'm going to try and do another Knight play. I'm going to try and do a Knight playthrough of Fallen Order. Who knows how well that's going to go, but again, I'd love to have a whole episode just about the gameplay mechanics of this game, because it I like the medium and how Jedi Fallen Order kind of reinvents the medium of Star Wars game. But I think that's gonna have to be another time, because we're getting into the meat and potatoes of the first 40 minutes. I thought I'll summarize today, and then
no problem.
We'll alternate summarizing.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Jedi Fallen Order starts off 5 years after the rise of the Empire. We're jumping 4 years in our timeline to 14 BBY. We start on the planet of Bracca, where Cal Kestis is part of the Scrappers Guild after surviving Order 66 as a Jedi Padawan. He is working on scrapping old Republic Venator-class Star Destroyers for the Empire as a part of the Scrappers Guild with his good Avednado friend, Prof. While on a mission to scrap some stuff, Cal is forced to use the Force to save Croft from a deadly fall, which puts him at the attention of the Empire, who's obviously still searching the galaxies for any surviving Jedi with Lord Vader and the help of his group, the Inquisitorius. So two Inquisitors, the Second and Ninth Sister, come down to Bracca to see what's going on. They capture Cal's group of scrappers. Prof dares to speak up against the Inquisitors, and he is summarily executed for that. Then Cal blocks another strike and another civilian with his light, with his own lightsaber that he's had since he's been marooned on Bracca since he escaped Order 66, and he begins an escape from the Inquisitorius after the Night Sister drops him off a cliff. He receives help from the crew of a ship called the Stinger Mantis, but before he can completely rejoin them, he engages in a duel with the Second Sister before being rescued by the Stinger Mantis, its first mate, Seer, former Jedi Master, former Jedi Knight Seer Junda, and the pilot, Greez Dritus. They take him, Seer reveals her former Jedi status to him, and they take him to a secret planet unknown to the Empire that they hide out on sometimes called Bogano. Inside Bogano, there is an old Jedi vault that was maintained by Seer's former master, Eno Cordova. She arranges for Cal to meet Cordova's former droid, BD-1, who goes with Cal as his companion everywhere. Cordova reveals, or the hologram of Cordova reveals it once Cal gets inside the temple, that he knows the location of a holocron containing a list of Force-sensitive children around the galaxy that could be used to restart the Jedi Order and fight the Empire. But that in order to get that, Cal must follow Cordova's journey following an ancient species called the Zeppo. And Cordova lists two worlds as possible resources for Cal's research about the Zeppo. First, their home planet called simply Zeppo. And the second, the ancient dark side planet of Dathomir. And that's pretty much where we end, with Cal setting off on his quest to learn more about the Zeppo and find that holocron before the Empire does. A lot of great setup, a lot of just great stuff in this.
Absolutely action-packed.
It's a really great, like, and this is something that I think Star Wars knows how to do very well. It's a great setup. There's a lot of great setup here. There's a lot of great introductions to our story arcs, our themes, our characters, our motifs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had kind of a weird... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I had kind of a weird introduction to the Jedi Fallen Order video games because Eli and I have spent a lot of time together playing through Survivor, but this is really my first time going back and actually experiencing the story of Fallen Order. But I agree, I thought that the introductions were very well done and seemed very consistent and seemed very consistent and put together with what I saw in the future in Jedi Survivor. Yeah, I thought the opening shot was amazing. The special singing, the throat singing that they had.
Dugan Essana, the Who. I remember there being a lot of buzz when Jedi Fallen Order came out about the Who and their fantastic piece for this game. What a great,
very, very cool, interesting decision.
What a piece to start off the game. I had notes about that too.
Yeah.
God, I love their stuff.
Yeah.
I remember, yeah. I feel like a friend of mine brought up the Who, not as related to Fallen Order, years ago. And I'm like, that's interesting. Mongolian throat singing combined with some modern classic sounds. That's interesting. And then I heard them in Fallen Order. I'm like, hell yeah, let's go.
Yeah. It's a great, and Bracca overall, you know, I love that they're not shy with, I guess, the symbolism and the intentional imagery. You know, here's Cal, he's on the run, he's in hiding. And he's found himself in a literal graveyard of the Republic. Venators, ATTEs, gunships being picked apart for scrap metal. You know, it's...
Yeah.
We literally see a ship cutter slice up a Venator in front of...
There's that infamous shot that was featured in the trailer for this game, I remember, of Cal dusting off that old Republic starfighter and seeing the, like, dusting off the Jedi Order logo. You know, Bracca is so rich with visual symbolism, and it's a really, like, I forgot how well they executed it. It's, and remember, by the way, Braca appeared in Fallen Order before it appeared in Bad Batch Season 2. This was the introduction into canon of Braca. It was a new planet created for this game. So even though Bad Batch takes place earlier in the timeline, this was our first look at Braca and the Scrappers Guild and all of the mess that happens there. But yeah, I love what you said about, like, you know, the old era is gone, as I wrote. The old era is gone. Now is the time of the Empire. Actually, that is one of the things that I'm so glad to see and that I've been rooting for in the Bad Batch. And it's one of my only critiques of the Bad Batch, that they haven't given it to us yet. But you know what I've seen in this? You know what I've seen in this video game that I like?
What's that?
Those are some fucking Imperial Stormtroopers, baby. They're Stormtroopers, there's TIE Fighters, there's, like, long live the Empire. Like, not obviously, I'm not an Imperial supporter or anything, but, like, the Empire is in full strength. Like, they've conquered the galaxy, and the symbolism of the Imperial Stormtrooper, of the TIE Fighter, of the, like, I love that we're now finally through that transition that we're seeing in the Bad Batch, where we have the classic Imperial iconography, because you can do a lot with storytelling. You can get a lot of mileage out of those symbols because there's such a great representation of what you're fighting against. The facelessness of fascism, the lack of autonomy, and the, like, you know, everybody marching in a line, not allowed to question anything, you know, propaganda and all that shit. It's such evocative, powerful imagery, and I'm glad we finally got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about, how did you say, Prowf?
Prof.
For some reason I was saying it was Prowf in my head, but Prof. I love Prof. I'm really sad that we don't get more Prof because
one of the best, I'll call him one of the best bang for your buck characters. Because we spend very limited time for him. But what we get with him is so goddamn important to this story.
Yeah. Like, absolutely.
There's so many, like, yeah, he's by the way, I kind of hate Prof, so I'm not going to lie to you, because he takes on the echo job of takes on the echo role of doing our job for us. As they would say, one of the only good things they say at CinemaSins, believe me, I hate CinemaSins, but one of the only good things they say there, Prophet would be excellent at In a Galaxy. I don't really hate him, but here we are scrapping these ships from the war just so they can turn around and make new ones. I'm like, Prof.
Yeah, but
hold on, buddy. That's our job.
On the other hand, I will say, you know, Star Wars, you know, often, most of the time, is very political. It has a political message. And I like that we kind of have a character who is more who seems to be very politically aware. Not just in terms of,
or at least just societally aware.
Not just in terms of, we have to fight tyranny, but he really is kind of helping show the audience what specifically what impacts the tyranny of the Empire is having on him.
Absolutely.
You know, he's saying, you know, we're being pushed into, you know, an economic backslide. You know, people are being impoverished because, you know, we were engineers and now we're forced. We were engineers and now we're forced to just be scrappers. You know, they're scrapping all these perfectly good ships so that they can make new ones, you know, with the lucrative military contracts that they're getting. I don't say that, but, you know, I mean, they say Star Wars, people try to pretend that Star Wars doesn't have a leftist slant, but to me it's incredibly obvious, and I especially here, and I really like this message, you know, of having a character like Prof who is very politically aware. You know, I mean, he You could literally he literally gets killed, you know, speaking about what the Empire has done in the name of labor. He is protesting in the name of labor. He says, "This is what the Empire has done. You're keeping us in poverty. Your government is manipulating the economy to keep people down, to keep people
it's
willing to
like,
work for cheap, for pittance wages."
It's
and
almost
like, oh wow.
It's
Hello,
almost
real
like
world.
If there was like
very relevant.
A bunch of very wealthy corporations that weren't paying their writers and actors fairly.
Or anyone else for that matter.
Or anyone else for that matter. And they were striking look, as we've said in our intros and stuff like that in our coverage, due to the strikes, we don't make any money by promoting anything anyway, so we feel fine not covering, like, we feel fine covering films and television shows that would be considered struck. But now we're on a video game, and now we can really let loose. But yeah, no, Prof would be right there in New York or in Los Angeles right now with the members of SAG-AFTRA and WGA. I don't know if
or
you
any,
saw
or
Sendis.
Any other or any know, other labor movement.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this, but any, but there was a clip today. Tony Gilroy attended the WGA SAG joint strike in New York this morning.
Oh, all
and
right.
He gave this extremely powerful 7.5 minute speech at one of the protests, and it was fantastic. It sounded like, obviously this of course because he wrote it, but like it did sound so Andor to me. It really did. Like we're I know I'm not the biggest fan of Andor, and I often like maybe shit on it a bit too much, but we are lucky to have him as one of our creators in Star Wars.
Yes. I think you would agree. I think one thing you would say about Andor is that it's a real world message. The political messaging is spot on in Andor.
It's
I
fantastic.
There, very, very, very savvy, very prescient, extremely relevant. And
yes.
I think that, you know, I think that Jedi Fallen Order, at least this first little bit, is as well, because.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I feel like we often talk about the Empire as, we often talk about it in terms of when we're talking about the messages and we're talking about what lessons we can take. We often talk about authoritarianism, fascism, you know, be wary of strongman leaders, you know.
Yeah.
But what we don't often talk about, I think, and if you kind of look at the lore and look at the new media as well for Star Wars, what becomes incredibly apparent is they're saying it my interpretation of all this is the Empire doesn't just have all this power because of the Empire. The Empire has all this power because they're in league with they've created kind of a corporatocracy to go along with to go along with Palpatine's dictatorship.
Oh yeah, they
where massive
they
companies are treading
work
all over everything.
Yeah, they
working
work
alongside
alongside these
them.
Massive businesses to,
and the companies
you know,
don't care what they
consolidate their wealth.
Yeah. As long as they get their profits, they don't care.
It's not just an authoritarian or a fascist society, it's also an oligarchy, where, you know, the seeds of wealth and power get planted in only a few pots, to put the metaphor. You know, it screws over the work of ordinary people who are just trying to make ends meet in the galaxy.
Yeah.
God, if there was any like metaphorical significance of anything that had to do with politics in the world today.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Wealth inequality.
Yeah. But like, yeah, the Braga is such a great place to start this game. And there's that fantastic line where he says, "Come on, Cal, you're a young guy. You don't want to end up like me. Eventually you gotta move on and live your life. Find your destiny." Like, Cal kept trying to hide. He's trying to hide from the Empire. He's trying to hide his past. And as Seer tells him later in this very, in this, this part we watched, the time for hiding is over. Eventually, you can't just run away from your past.
I was going to mention that line. Personally, if I'm being a little flippant, I might just say, Seer, it's 10 more years. It's 10, how many years? 14 more years until the
battle. She doesn't know that.
I know she doesn't know that, but like, Seer, maybe with the benefit of, you know, being the audience, she's got a little bit too much dip on her chip. However, she is right. And I think that that's one of the most compelling kind of questions and themes that's come forward to me. And I think it's going to be a big part of Jedi Fallen Order as well, possibly. In Andor, in Rebels, you know, how do you balance living to fight another day and planning for the future versus having you feel like a moral obligation to do what you can to stop evil today? And how do you balance that moral obligation with, you know, also feeling like you've been given this one life? It's incredibly difficult to sacrifice that, you know? And I think that's something that we kind of see a little bit of, you know, with you know, Seer and Cal and their kind of differing attitudes, you know, where Cal is very much still in even more so than Prof. He's just in hide and survive mode. And for good reason too. I'm not faulting him for that.
I'm not saying that Cal was weak or something. They're completely understandable reasons. And one of the great parts of this game, and I think something that Connor really loves about it, I don't want to speak for him, but I've talked with him much about this, is how this game deals with Cal's trauma. Because that's why he's hiding. It's because he's still traumatized by Order 66. He's still traumatized by losing his master. He's still traumatized by his sense of this happened because he failed somehow. Which is not true. Like, this wasn't really at all his fault.
Yeah.
And but he blames himself. But I'm going to say, to go back a little bit, I just got to say that a couple of just small things that I want to go over. First of all, maybe one of my funniest lines in freaking Star Wars is that you are not approved trash line. Perfect.
Yeah.
Love it. Love that line. Never not love that line. You are not approved trash is fantastic.
Cue the Seinfeld music. It doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. Also, I was going to say, and I know that when we were playing Survivor recently, there was one of these ones that happened, ironically, with a capital ship of the other side of the war. But when they do those large panning, huge scale shots of Cal climbing the Venator on Braca, like, damn, that looks good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one thing that I will say about
And they do that with a Lucre Hulk in Survivor.
Yeah. And it's hard to stay organized because I have so many different thoughts. We both have different thoughts about the game. But one thing that I wanted to touch on, and maybe this is a good time to delve into more of the visual, you know, kind of hard point side of the game, is, my gosh, this game is beautiful. It's dramatic. It feels larger than life. You know, it really feels Star Wars size, you know? On Baraka especially, you know, massive dramatic shots, you know, just the scale of everything. I feel like sometimes in video games, you don't get, it doesn't feel, the scale sometimes cannot come through if you're trying to have a very dramatic setting with, you know, huge drop-offs and, you know, towering buildings or mountains or whatever it is. But in this first part, at least, they get it bang on. And it really...
The scale of both Jedi games is massive, and I think it's one of its biggest strengths.
Yeah.
in making these feel like the epic stories that they are.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, Cal's really just hanging by his fingers off a 10,000 foot drop, you know?
Yeah.
On a little metal beam. Like, he's like, it's visceral. It's so visceral in a way that
and I
not
think that,
easy for video games to do. So I don't want to take that for granted because it really...
It's incredible.
It enhances
I think
the story.
And I think that there's something really special about, like, I know that Alex Damon was talking about this when he was talking about Indiana Jones movies, where he's like, I like it, my Indiana Jones to span as much of the globe as it possibly can. And while I'm not sure I agree with him specifically for Indiana Jones, like, it's not that I don't think that, it's just that I don't really care about that as much as he does. I do care about that with Star Wars. Like, if we can see as much of the galaxy as possible, like, as big and as sprawling of an adventure we can get.
Yeah.
And Jedi Fallen Order is a fucking prime example of the big sprawling adventure. Broca to Bogano to Zeffo to Dathomir to Kashyyyk to Nerr to, you know, all of the Ilum we go later in the game. Yeah. Survivor's not as great at doing it as Fallen Order is, but it's still pretty good. From, you know, from Coruscant to Kobo to Jeddah to, what's that place? The freaking, to Novigarin to Tantalor, you know, all these different sprawling expanses of planets to the Shattered Moon. Like, yes.
Yeah. Every single planet, just, you know, it's a video game. It's computer graphics. They can do whatever they want and they make use of that. Pretty perfectly, I think. Every single planet feels it feels like everything. And I've watched Eli. I'm a backseat gamer when it comes to Survivor. I have more fun just letting the story unfold, and Eli and I will hang out. He'll play, and we'll be hanging out, and I'll be watching him play.
it's fun. Whatever works for you.
I like to watch Eli do it.
Yeah, was I gonna say about the friend?
But I was sorry. Can I? I just want to finish my thought.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So I will, like, even though this is my first time experiencing Fallen Order, I have seen a lot of Survivor, and I will say each planet, even planets that we've seen before, like Jeddah, just something about experiencing them. Kind of walking a person around, going all the different places you can go, you know, being in that third person camera setting, it just feels like it turns every planet up to 11. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't. I'm done gushing about it now. I think it's pretty phenomenal, suffice it to say.
It's fantastic. I just realized, Jacob, so season 17 of In a Galaxy is going to be Survivor. We're going to have an entire episode just dedicated to spammel jokes, right?
Okay. Marin saying, like, Marin in her Marin voice saying, like, quick, hop on a spammel.
It was a little strange to me when I played it for the first time, but only when you started pointing it out that I'm like, yeah, that's really fucking funny.
I felt like they're trolling us. EA, DICE, they're trolling us.
You're now going to see who
they're trolling
us. Well, Mara's not going to appear until she probably won't appear until episode 3 or 4 of this season. I don't think we'll run into her next time. Maybe the time after that. But you'll see, of course, because you've seen Survivor Marin, you'll see where she comes from. Every character, there was a YouTuber who made this point that I was watching. Every character in Survivor, it feels like, versus Fallen Order, it's just the Daniel, the cooler Daniel meme. Where every one of them feels cooler and more interesting and just more badass than they were in Fallen Order. Not that they're not good characters in Fallen Order, but that they just have an extra level of swagger. That happens to Cal, that happens to Marin, that happens to Seer. It happens to all of them.
I mean, it makes sense. You know, they're all older and wiser, more experienced, more confident. Cal definitely comes into his own, you know?
Yeah. But now we have, like, and by the way, I've shit on a lot on Cal a lot with friends and stuff like that. But I gotta say, like, God bless Cameron Monaghan. Like, he, like, I think this is one of the first Star Wars projects we've come into on in the galaxy with the use of motion capture. And I've never seen motion capture with Star Wars go badly. Like,
yeah,
it usually
works out.
It's so, like, the actors give such fantastic performances. You know, we'll talk about with other stuff, like with The Force Awakens and the sequel trilogy, and we'll talk about with Battlefront 2 and stuff like that. But with this game specifically, the stuff done by Deborah Wilson and by Cameron Monaghan as Seer Jundah and Cal Kestis are fantastic. They're just great. I love how you can feel them, like of course it's not really them, it's like the animated version of them, but you know, they're acting with the suits on and all that kind of stuff, and you can feel they're putting their all into this like they would if it were a purely live action role.
Yeah, it comes through, you know, you really just want to. And I will admit I saw some videos before I really knew about Fallen Order, about Survivor. You know, I saw some videos, I saw a little gameplay. I was a hater, man. I didn't get the full experience, and I will admit that I was hating a little bit. But I mean, hats off. I have nothing but positive things to say about this first segment, to be honest.
Yeah, there's some great stuff. I want to get to the train sequence because I feel like we've just spent enough time gushing generally. Let's get to the train sequence. As I mentioned in the Bad Batch last season, three seasons in a row of Star Wars and the Galaxy will be dealing with train sequences. Bad Batch Season 2, Fallen Order, and then Solo all have train sequences.
It's a Star Wars staple.
Yeah. Actually, I don't think it's as common as, like, I think we just happened to get lucky with those three in a row all having train sequences. I like this one because it's very, it's grim, but it's also grim in that pulpy way because, like, I think one of the things that Fallen Order does the most interestingly, because, you know, there are a lot of people who divide Star Wars up into those two flavors of, like, the dark and grim and serious versus the fun and lighthearted. And I don't believe that for a second. I think that all have combinations of the two. But I think that this game specifically has, and its sequel to, and Survivor 2, have the most interesting blend of the two. Because they have they have elements of both of them for sure. Like, there are serious stakes. Characters are lost. You feel those stakes. But there's light in the darkness. But there's light in the darkness. There's silliness. There's goofiness. There's some weird shit that happens in this game. In these games, you fight like fucking hella mythological beasts in this game. Dagon Gera is one of the goofiest characters in Star Wars, and you fight him three times in Survivor. There's some Terran Malakos is kind of goofy too, but like there's some serious shit too here. Like, Cal's whole emotional traumatic journey is very grim and serious and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think I think they balance it well.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that in this first segment, they did a very good job of, you know, it felt, I think that a lot of the sequences, especially when we start talking about Trilla, the second sister, you know, especially.
Yeah, when Trilla comes in and then,
you know, the train car scene, Cal's vision, you know, it's pretty intense, especially for cutscenes, for a story that's being interwoven with gameplay. Like, it definitely gets a little grim, but it still has enough of just driving forward momentum and an underlying excitement to get
it,
to the next
it
thing.
Has heart. It has a lot of heart.
I think part of that's just it being a video game, you know, you don't want to we're kind of consuming it as if it was a movie or TV show, the way that we're stitching it together. It's really not, you know. We have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, do you want to talk about the second sister yet? Because
not yet. I want to talk about the vision first.
Okay.
With Cal and his late master Jar T'Pol. We now know, thanks to Survivor, and this is not really a spoiler for Survivor, and I think you heard this too, that Jaro is a student of Yaddle. Jaro is T'Pol's
master. I did not know
was
that.
Yaddle.
That is very cool.
So Cal is the latest, is part of the Yaddle line of Jedi. I assume Yaddle was trained by Yoda, but I don't actually know that for a fact. Let's see. Who was Yaddle trained by? Do we know?
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Not in canon. I think in Legends maybe it was confirmed as Yoda. No, in Legends it was named Polvin Cutt. Was the master of Yaddle. But yeah, Yaddle was the master of Jarro T'Pol. And Jarro is first of all, he's a Lasat, as you've seen.
Lasat Jedi, let's go.
Yeah, and he upheld some of the finest ideals. I think he was a very model Jedi. I think I would put him with some of the good Jedi like Qui-Gon Jinn or Obi-Wan Kenobi. I mean, not less so Obi-Wan, but with Qui-Gon Jinn and Plo Koon and a lot of those people. And you know, there's that great line here that I want to bring up. Apprentice, mark well and listen.
Oh yeah.
Trust
oh, my gosh.
Only in the Force. Which I think is also such a great thesis statement for this game, because, like, you know, obviously Cal is going to build his own community around him, and that's one of the themes of this game. But when everything else is falling out around you, what can you do? You trust in the Force, you trust your instincts, you go back to the basic lessons of the Jedi. They will always be there for you. And it's not that, like, the Force isn't a magic fix-it, but it will act as a guide for you every time you need it to. If you trust your instincts, if you do what you feel is right, as Obi-Wan says to Luke in A New Hope, if you act with compassion, if you act selflessly, not selfishly.
Yeah.
So that's a fantastic line, and something that a lot of people bring up, and I think, honestly, what was I gonna say? I think honestly, other people like it more than I do, but like I still like it. It's one of the most valuable quotes in that game.
Absolutely, it is. The dialogue, I think, is really good. I was surprised by the quality. Maybe I was being a hater, but I was surprised by a lot of things. Pleasantly so.
All right. Do we want to get to, I think, maybe one of our longer conversations about this game? About our friends in this new organization that's been introduced that's going to leave a huge impact on Star Wars in the years, at least in the canon universe to come. It already wreaks some havoc for about 4 or 5 years before this game come out. I'm, of course, talking about the Imperial Inquisitorius.
Those Inquisitorius,
I think, is one of the best things that they've transferred from Legends to canon. I think it's one of the best, like, I think it's one of the best concepts they've had for canon just generally so far. There's so much that they've done with this group of people, and I think there's some really fascinating stuff they've done. We have, as of right now, I think we have 15 members of the Inquisitorius, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, we have 15 Inquisitors. We have, of course, Grandy himself. We have, actually 16. Grandy, second sister, who we'll talk about later. Third brother, who we don't know about. Third sister, who's Reva. Fourth sister, who we don't really know anything about. Fifth brother, who we'll get to when we get to him in Obi-Wan Kenobi. Sixth brother, who was killed a few years ago by Ahsoka in the Ahsoka book. The seventh sister, who we'll get to in Rebels. Eighth brother, who we'll get to in Rebels. Ninth sister, who we'll get to a little later in this game. Obviously, we'll start with second and nine here. Tenth brother, who was killed a few years ago in the comics. 13th sister, and Tuolon, who we don't know who his number from the novel Rise of the Red Blade, who were actually killed in this year. Merrick, who is appearing in the Ahsoka series right now. That Inquisitor from Tales of the Jedi, who we talked about in our Tales of the Jedi episode. And then another unidentified female Inquisitor who apparently was apparently killed on Dathomir.
I already feel like an old man shaking my fist at the sky. but I remember a time when there was just the Inquisitor in season one of Rebels. Times have really changed, I guess.
Yeah, there are a lot of Inquisitors, and I really enjoy this organization of, like, yeah, again, they're not quite Sith, but they're
not even
side.
Close to being Sith, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're not even close. I think Granny's the closest, but not really even.
I don't know.
But they're these dark side warriors who, you know, make it their mission to wipe out all the remaining Jedi in the galaxy that Vader and Palpatine couldn't get to via Order 66 or the raid on the Jedi Temple.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really fantastic. There's some really great characters in the Inquisitorius. That's what I love
absolutely.
About it. It's a vehicle for some really great character development and character arcs revolving around that constant struggle between the dark and the light.
Yeah. One thing that I like about the Inquisitorius as a set of characters, specifically Trilla in this, also, for example, you know, the Grand Inquisitor in season one of Rebels, is they are laser focused as individuals and as an organization on wiping out Jedi. Laser focused. And it shows, you know, they're not like, you know, Palpatine and Vader, you know, they're doing their own things, kind of. Like, to them, exterminating the Jedi is more of a
one of their roles, but it's not their only goal.
Yeah, it's not their only goal. Palpatine's more interested in immortality and all this stuff. You know, these are the ones who, and you know, with mix, sometimes they look silly. Sometimes they trip over themselves, put their feet in their mouth, whatever. But man, if it isn't intimidating. Listening to Trilla, you know, seeing Trilla, you know, when she pulls up on Cal, and it's like, oh shit, she has like a whole file on this guy. Like, she knows exactly how to trash talk, how to do what's Dunmock.
Yeah, Dunmock.
How to do Dunmock specifically to target the Jedi's mental and emotional weak points. You know. With the Grand Inquisitor saying, "Oh my gosh, Form 3, you must be so."
Which Master Balaba's favored to a ridiculous degree.
Yeah, you know, it's like this
I remember
is
that
really like
that line is fantastic.
These people are specialized, and that I think is very
they train
very
heavily
cool
at their fortress on Nur, which we will see of course in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, but also very famously at the end of this game. But yeah, let's talk about Trilla and Masana, who's the Night Sister. I gotta say this. So I've been recently embarking on a bit of a project on the side. I've tracked down all of the characters that appear on screen in Star Wars. And I've begun for myself, for my own like edification. I think I'll do like a thread on Twitter about this sometime. I've been trying to rank all the Star Wars characters.
What?
Yeah.
Jeez.
It's not like I expect to finish this anytime soon, because I don't, because it's ridiculous. But I have my top like 200 basically right now.
I can't even begin to imagine how I would try to rank characters. I don't know if that's even possible for me to do that on such a large level, at least.
It's again, there's a lot of estimation and stuff like that and all that kind of stuff. Trilla is the highest ranked Inquisitor on that list. She's number 16 overall. There are only 15 Star Wars characters that I like more than Trilla Siduri.
Wow.
That's it. I am such a huge fan of this character. Do I have a little bit of a crush on her? Yes, absolutely. But do I also do I also love this character? Yes, yes, I do. I love this character. I love her story. I love the Second Sister. I think she's my favorite Inquisitor. She is my favorite Inquisitor. Reva's very close behind, but Trilla is fantastic. She's such a great character. I love I love the path she takes in this story. And God, if I could take back one death in Star Wars, I would take back Trilla's. If I could have Trilla survive the spoiler confrontation on Nur at the end of this game, I would that would be my hesitation. No hesitation. I'm also a bit of a Cal Trilla shipper myself. Again, didn't happen because, you know, death for one of those people. But yeah, I'm such a huge fan of her. I wish I could say the same for the Ninth Sister. I wish I could say the same for Miss Sonatai. I feel like I've given her a lot of chances. Same thing with her and also Fifth Brother. I feel like I've given them both a lot of chances. And they just keep being kind of uninteresting to me. You know, we think that Ninth Sister dies in Fallen Order. She doesn't. They bring her back for Survivor. Then Cal kills her for real. And then she's made some appearances in the comic earlier on. I just don't care about her. I just don't care. Like, I've tried. I just can't. Like, I think her fight with Cal and on Kashyyyk in this game is very cool. I just don't know what it is. I can't. Like, I know a friend of the show, Michael McCoy, loves the Ninth Sister as a character. I don't get her. I cannot get her. Also, she has maybe one of the worst lines of dialogue in this entire clip that we watched today.
Which is?
When Trilla throws Cal over to her, she picks him up and she goes, "I found the Jedi!" I'm like,
yeah, I don't know. She's.
I'm like, why did you, like, obviously you found the Jedi. She was right there. Trilla just threw her over to you. Why do you need to say that? That felt very prequels to me and not in the good way, honestly. like I'm like, that's just weird. That just felt unnecessary.
I don't know. To me, I think the thing about the Inquisitorius, and this ties into that, is that there's a lot of there, like the grand, I think the grand the Grand Inquisitor in Rebels, the second sister Trilla, and the seventh sister in Rebels, like that's the pinnacle of the Inquisitorius. You know, they are lethal, they are intimidating, they are super, super scary. You know, you're worried that they
also put Reva really up hurt. There, but like
Reva, I don't know about Reva. I feel like her. I could get into Reva, and I'm not hating on her as a character, but I feel like her whole, she just has this whole kind of like high school bully, like trying too hard kind of vibe that kind of,
well, yeah,
I think it's purposeful, but I feel like it kind of undercuts her scariness.
Think that's very true for Trilla too, honestly.
Yeah. I guess I haven't seen all of Trilla, at least in this first, this first segment. I was very convinced by her portrayal. However, I feel like a lot of times the Inquisitorius kind of gets undercut by all the times when they're just so goofy, you know? They just like the Ninth Sister, the Eighth Brother, you know, the way he dies in Rebels, you know, even the way,
and you're thinking about the copper sabers. Just say you're thinking about.
I'm
the
thinking
copper
about.
Sabers.
I'm not thinking. I wasn't actually thinking about the saber coppers. I was thinking more about also the way the fifth brother. He just kind of dies. I guess he's kind of putting up a fight against Maul.
He's just there. The entire existence of the fifth brother is
she has
just.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, he is kind of just there. You know, he's always
in every appearance I've seen of the fifth brother. He's just kind of there.
Yeah,
I appreciate how just kind of there Sung Kang was as fifth brother, but like in Obi-Wan Kenobi, and I love seeing that character in live action because I'm a sucker for any animated character finding its way to live action. But fifth brother was exactly as just there in Obi-Wan Kenobi as he was in Rebels. That's just true. I was more intrigued by the fourth sister in Obi-Wan Kenobi who had zero lines than the fifth brother who was an actual secondary character.
Yeah. So I think the Inquisitors as characters are kind of undercut by some of their own members who just, you know, can't seem to get their ducks in a row for whatever reason, you know. Like the fifth brother in Rebels, he and the seventh sister are fighting Ahsoka. Seventh sister's doing all the work. He literally just charges at her twice, gets knocked out twice. I don't think Ahsoka even clashes blades with him once. She literally just
Doesn't grabs she just kick him. Her into the wall?
She
kick
literally him into the grabs wall? Him and throws him into the wall. And he gets knocked yeah. out. Like, absurd. Absurd. Absolutely absurd.
Ahsoka so, objectively has more trouble with Merrick in the second episode of Ahsoka than she does with Fifth Brother in freaking Future of the Force. Like, that fight lasts longer. Way longer. Not even close.
I mean, Ahsoka's just got... Ahsoka just has the Inquisitor's number, I feel like, at least from what I've seen. You know,
well,
just,
not Merrick, but... You know.
Not Merrick, but she just...
Yeah,
she just that, manhandles yeah. the fifth and the seventh, you know?
Yeah,
and Rebels.
Five, Ahsoka versus 5 and 7 is just so fun to watch, but we'll get to
it's
that when we
so
get to that.
So lopsided. Anyway, let's get back on
yeah.
back on track. What are we...
On,
what else do
yeah.
you, what else do you want to talk about?
So I think there are a few more things I want to get to. Let's get to, of course, the death of our boy Prof. He speaks his mind, and then Trilla just takes that lightsaber and puts it right through him.
Who coined this phrase "R.I.P. to a real one"?
I think
who
that was
that on this show?
I think that was D'Vor, but I'm not sure.
Is that D'Vor?
Or at least he popularized it on this show.
That might have been
D'Vor. R.I.P. to a real one. I think I might have even wrote that. No, I don't. I didn't write that here. But yeah, he is, as I call him, he's the Trask Ulgo of Jedi Fallen Order. Trask is that one character in KOTOR who guides you through the tutorial mission and then immediately dies. And that's what Prof is. He guides you through the tutorial and then immediately dies. Except for Prof's a lot more interesting than Trask Ulgo ever was.
Yeah. Rip Prof. What else? What do
yeah,
you think about Sears?
I was gonna say.
Introduction?
I was gonna say. Let's talk about the Stinger Mantis. Let's talk about the Stinger Mantis crew. Seer.
Seer's
a character. What?
Grab some seat. Great line.
I want to talk about Greasy Money, baby. But we'll do that later. Seer is a character that I struggled with in Fallen Order, but I think improved a lot in Survivor. I had a hard time with her arc in general. There's this very like, it's this weird thing of like, I forgot how insistent Seer was that she wasn't a Jedi in Fallen Order.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that is one of the things in this first 40 minutes, you know, we don't get too deep into it, but I am kind of left wondering, like, we keep hearing her say that she's not a Jedi, but she never says why. We don't get an explanation yet.
We will know why.
I'm looking forward to that. Like, that is
yeah.
a good, that is a good source of, I guess,
if
that
you
is,
want
that
me
is
to
a good
like
source of some tension
de facto
in the story.
Spoil it.
You don't have to spoil it.
Okay.
spoil it. It's okay.
Because I had a note that was kind of spoilery for the game. So just for this game. But yeah. But for those of you who know, you know that why Seer is the way she is. But I forgot how, it's not just how separate from the Force she is, but how separate from the Jedi she is. And I enjoy that she gets that back in Survivor. I enjoy that she gets that connection back to the Order in Survivor. And I think that that is actually connecting back to Ahsoka yet again. I think that's an arc that Ahsoka is going to go on in her show. This is, by the way, recorded after the first two episodes of Ahsoka. This will probably release probably after 3, but we haven't seen Ahsoka 3 as of this recording. But I think that's something that Ahsoka has always had a connection to the Force. But I think the series is going to establish like her regaining her connection with the Jedi, not maybe as an order, but as a calling, as a principle of how to live your life. Yeah, I like Seer okay in this game, but she's fantastic in Survivor. I think she's a real standout character in Survivor. And then, of course, we got to talk about my man, my boy, Greasy Money, baby. Greasy Money, baby. Grease is very much with Cal Seer and Grease, actually, all of them really. Like I liked them all okay in Fallen Order, but then Survivor just boosted my opinion of them so greatly. With the moment in Survivor where he agrees to join back up with Cal and Bo to fuck Bo to Kuna fame, Cal goes, "Greasy Money, baby!" And I just started to cheer. I'm like, yeah, this guy's back. Greasy money, baby. Grab some seat. It's something he says actually a lot, as you notice through both games. Grab some seat, which is just maybe some a great thing. He's a Latero, forearms, just a great like personal guy. He's very much. I feel like he is very much he's very much like the Zeb of this. Of this crew, kind of the Zeb, kind of combined with the Hera, in like terms of roles that the crew plays. But I also do like. I was gonna say that's the other thing. I like how distinctive they are from the Ghost crew.
Yeah,
like the principals seem similar, but they're very distinctive people.
They kind of show. I think sometimes Star Wars, and it's difficult sometimes to avoid talking about Star Wars or the creators as a monolith or something, you know. But I will say, you know, Star Wars, you know, a lot of the tracks that it runs in are really, they're well-worn classic types of stories and heroes journeys and different tropes that have been around long, long, long before Star Wars, sometimes hundreds or even thousands of years. So with that in mind, I think Star Wars sometimes can fall into the trap of, I think, doing something that is just a little bit too similar to the way that some other piece of Star Wars has already done something. But they definitely avoid that here. It definitely doesn't feel like another Ghost crew type of thing, even though the structure of the story in some ways
does feel similar. Yes.
It does feel similar, you know, with them, rescuing kind of.
And helping
They rescue Ezra. Ezra kind of becomes the missing piece. They rescue Cal. Cal becomes the missing piece.
Well, actually, you know? Because that's the thing. Because maybe Cal's the not the last. Also, but... That's the other thing. Cal's not the last member of the Mantis crew. It's Marin. And then later it's Bode too. So.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I will say this. Yeah, yeah. But Cal and Grease and Seer are a great team, and I love their bonds that are strengthened in this game. We also get the revelation, of course, in this game, where Cal tells Seer, "I survived, but my connection to the Force is damaged." I love this. I love this addition to Star Wars. Like the idea that if you have trauma in your life, if you are disconnected from your identity as a Force user, that the Force, like any muscle you use, will fall into disrepair, will fall into damage. And Cal, through his trauma and his mental imbalance, is no longer able to wield the Force like he was. And this game is about him becoming the Jedi that he was when he lost it, and also becoming an even greater Jedi. And then of course we jump to Survivor, where he just quote a good friend of the show, Jared, as he's quoting Rude Boy Brody, has that dog in him. But you know, Cal doesn't have that dog in him in this game. He's trying to get himself back to the point where he could. And I think that's really special. It's something that this game does very well.
Yeah. I think, I love the intro. I think remains to be seen how I feel about Seer in the first game. I really liked her intro again. I thought that the voice acting and just the expression of every character, but especially Seer, was just phenomenal. I think in this first segment, and it was definitely a very compelling introduction for the character. At the very least, I'll say. Yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts?
I was going to... There are a couple other things. Oh, yeah. We have, of course, another member of our squad that we got to introduce. Our lovable droid, BD-1.
BD-1.
I don't know if you'll follow me on Twitter at OchiFan327. You'll know that one night at college when I was bored, I decided I was on a call with a friend of the show, also guest next week, Connor Tricchetti, and he witnessed me going through hundreds of hours of Jedi Fallen Order footage in order to find one thing. It is maybe my one of my favorite quotes of Star Wars in the Disney era. And it's the infamous, "I need a stim, BD!" And I kind of made that a meme in my own head for some reason. I don't know why I love it so much. I just like the Cal's delivery of, "BD, need a stim! I need a stim, BD!" Like, it's just, yeah. Like, it's something you can, like, as long as you press one button on your controller, you can just repeat over and over again. And how Cameron Monaghan says it is just so funny to me. And yeah. It's just become such a staple of the Jedi games that you need to control when you use your stims and when to heal. And, like, and sometimes, like, you click the button, but it doesn't, like, respond instantly. So you got to do it again. And maybe you're in a hairier situation by then. And I love, like, you know, the introduction of a stim in that game is just so cool. And it's fun seeing what would become a staple of the game be established like that. Yeah, and also BD just being like Cal's puppy is just so funny. It's just so funny and so adorable. Yeah. Like
the backpack robot.
The backpack robot, Cal with BD-1 on his back, like the incredibly like you know, he's grizzled Cal in Survivor, but he still does the thing where he goes, "Hey, hi, I'm Cal. This is BD-1. Like, he still introduces the droid on his back. I just find it so adorable. And the relationship between those two is just so good. Like, that organic droid relationship is one of the best in Star Wars, I think. Yeah, we get our holocron, we get the MacGuffin when we talk to Cordova. And we get, of course, our ancient society, the Protheans, sorry, the Zepho. For any of you Mass Effect fans, I've just recently finished my first playthrough of the Mass Effect Legendary Edition trilogy. That there's an ancient society in the Mass Effect universe that developed a lot of their technology called the Protheans. And when I talked to friend of the show Michael McCoy about this, who knows a lot about the Mass Effect universe, he's like, "Yeah, when I saw the Zepho in Jedi Fallen Order, I immediately thought of the Protheans." And now that I'm looking at the Zepho in Jedi Fallen Order, I can't help but think of the Protheans, especially because, spoiler for Mass Effect, you get to meet a Prothean in Mass Effect 3. You know, just this ancient society of people who had, like, this interesting technology, but then they disappeared without a trace for no reason, apparently, and you have to figure out what happened to them. So I had to throw in the Mass Effect reference, but... Yeah, I'm excited to re-dive back into the Zepho, who, it's funny, like, I love this game, but, like, it is weird that, like, the Zepho just, like, we kind of, like, do a little bit of journey in the Zepho, and then Survivor's like, "Okay, so anyway, back to our real story." And we're like, "What about the Zepho?" And then Cordova even says in Jedi Survivor, when he finds out he's alive, he's like, "Yeah, I kind of just gave up with the Zepho." And we're like, "Oh, so everything we did in this game is just kind of, like... for nothing." That's cool. Anyway, yeah, I've been rambling on for a while. What do you have? Anything else for these 40 minutes that we just did?
First off, Seer has one line that really stuck in my head. She says, "You survived, Cal." Wait, that's not till next game. The Jedi have fallen this game. Survivor's the next game.
Yes,
yes. That was like one of those... That was one of those, like, it's surviving time type of...
Oh yeah, no, like, the number of times, like, the number of the times they say, like, survivors in this game is funny.
In hindsight, knowing the name of the game that comes next in the series.
I was going to say, like...
I found it quite funny.
Because I don't think there is any, like... I'm trying to remember if they say Fallen Order in this game. I don't remember it specifically, but there is very much like a searching for, like in Survivor, searching for other Jedi survivors, look straight into camera.
Yeah.
It's funny. I think it's funny. Yeah.
But, I mean, that's pretty much it for me. What are your, also Cal playing the space guitar was definitely on my bingo card.
His psychometry is just really interesting. Yeah.
And learning that he had psychometry because of that. Was a cool twist as well.
Psychometry is such a great addition to add to these games because it really adds so much to the lore building of the universe, of the Jedi Fallen Order universe specifically, because you get to see, like, Cal gets to have these innate personal connections to things that he wouldn't have otherwise. But yeah, overall, I thought this was a very solid setup to this game. I'll make no secret of the fact that for me, Jedi Fallen Order is like Bad Batch Season 1 in a lot of ways, where I think it's perfectly fine. I think there's a lot of good stuff there, but I think that its successor completely outclasses it in almost every single way. But I also think that its successor outclassing it also makes it better. Because of the retroactive stuff that we know, like that we can figure out, like things that we know that will impact Cal and the other characters in Survivor that we can now look at in Fallen Order. But yeah, I think this was an extremely solid setup, great character development, and just great world building of this specific game.
Yeah. I thought that, overall, I really like this game as well so far. I think it can be really hard to create a good, emotionally compelling story in a video game. You know, like Knights of the Old Republic, for example. Fun story, good story. Definitely not the most, you know, I didn't feel the most emotionally invested in it. However, I think these cutscenes strung together, they do such a good job, I think, you know, portraying Cal, you know, his scrambling terror in the face of the, you know, unstoppable, unflappable, slow advance of the Empire hunting him down. You know, it's a video game. You know, it doesn't have to be this amazing multi-threaded magnum opus. But so far, I'm very pleasantly surprised. I really like what I see. It does very well, you know, in terms of being a very high octane kind of a romp, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't have a little bit of depth as well.
First of all, get out of here with that KOTOR slander. I don't accept KOTOR slander here. KOTOR 2 slander, absolutely. There is a slight KOTOR 2 reference in Ahsoka that I'm very mad about. But if you know, you know. But I think that we got some great stuff going on with Jedi Fallen Order. I'm not sure our next episode is going to be next week. We'll see when it is. But after we get our stuff back on track with this next episode, we will be returning back to a more weekly schedule. As 2023 winds to a close, we'll probably get seasons 14 and 15 of Star Wars and Galaxy covering Fallen Order and Solo, respectively, going pretty soon. But the next episode, as we've discussed many times, Alex, Damon, Connor Chikiti, and the two of us will be talking about the next 40 minutes of Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. In the meantime, you can follow us everywhere, Twitter, @IndieGalaxyPod, Instagram, @IndieGalaxyPod, everywhere, @IndieGalaxyPod. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your podcast will be there. You can find everything of mine. I have a link tree now. If you go to linktr-ee/_ochifan327, you can see where you can find me and all my stuff, as well as all the In a Galaxy stuff, Epic Confrontation stuff. We unfortunately did not have a match in August, but we're trying to do two matches in both September and October, so keep an eye out for that. And unless there's anything else, I think all I'll say is may the Force be with you. Always.
Always.